out. Alright, this is Pure Decking for April the 12th, 1961. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps. Tonight we've got Analog and BSV. What's up, guys?
Hello.
Hey.
You know, I've just noticed on my, because I've got two different MIDI controllers I use now with the soundboard. They both have a sync light or a beat light. They flash an LED in time to the music, and they are exactly opposite of each other.
Hmm. Strange.
Nah, one uses the up, one uses the down, I guess, for triggering where it is. But it's really funny to watch it. It's kind of confusing, actually, because it's like, oh, God, which one's on the one? But
nice.
So, of course, I don't actually do that much beat syncing, so I don't guess it really matters. But, you know, hey, whatever. So, anyways, just a little bit of station news. IHN is slated to return this weekend. I know we said it would show up last weekend, but Easter happened and practically no one was around. So, they did their, what would you call that, BSV? It was half IHN, half Nameless Review.
Complete madness.
That's, yeah.
You know, personally, I find it quite funny that they decided not to do IHN, yet most of them claim not to believe anything biblical or, you know, but Easter is quite the biblical holiday.
It's also, they probably looked at it as an excuse for free candy. So, you know, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to each their own. But, you know, I don't know.
I don't normally can get a free meal out of relatives that day.
Well, that is very the thing. True. That is the thing. Even if you claim to be an atheist, most of your family probably is not. So, if nothing else, at least be polite to your family, even if you're atheist, you know? So, anyways. So, RU and Patient Zero and a few others have finished going through all the tracks on the station. They're ready for more. So, hit up the website and shoot us open music, Creative Commons music, stuff we can use on the station without having to, you know, spend a ridiculous amount of money paying the RIAA a licensing fee, and we'll look at adding it. So, yeah, we'd like to get some new stuff into rotation. So, that and I like harassing RU with, hey, look, we just threw a whole bunch of new music in the folder for you, so just to see what it does.
You're not busy for another 60 hours.
It's like, what did we do? We made an OC48 line cry because of all the bit torrents we just did to get you that music. So, and I'm not actually talking about piracy because you get a lot of the Creative Commons music via BitTorrent too. So, anyways, so go ahead and jump right into it here. First story I got for tonight, it's from Time Magazine. The headline was "No Money, No Problems. Canada Considers Complete Digital Currency." And I was hoping we were going to have Suave on tonight for this one, but he's not around. So I don't like the way they wrote this, but what are you going to do? It's the article. While Canadians pull crumpled bits of paper, or while Americans pull crumpled bits of paper out of their pockets to pay for their Mega Millions tickets, Canadians are busy ditching all of their old currency. The Canadian government introduced plastic bills in November, recently announced it was doing away with pennies, and is now looking to go digital. The Royal Canadian Mint has announced it will release a completely digital currency called Mint Chip. Aside from sounding delicious, Mint Chip will be stored on physical chips and will be able to hand both big purchases, I guess that should be handle, both big purchases and nano transactions, purchases less than a dollar. If this sounds a lot like Bitcoin, the favorite currency of techies and libertarians alike, that's because it is, according to the National Post. The system has no centralized database. They're calling it anonymous. Sure they are. Their intention is that it is no more associated with you than traditional currencies, said Jacqueline Chilton with the Glenberg Partners, a California-based payment consultant. If you drop your plastic chip, the money on that chip is gone, just as if you dropped a $5 bill. Then there's the issue of hacking. Bitcoin magazine writer Vitalik Buterin told the National Post that other unhackable chips had been compromised using electron microscopes, needles, and acid. By acid, they actually mean, you know, the stuff that eats away, not the drug. Still, the Canadian, you know, the opposite of a base. Still, the Canadian government seems bent on winning the Canadian public over. On April 5th, Royal Canadian Mint announced a contest to entice software developers to create apps for the new currency. The prize is $50,000 in the most old-school currency on Earth, solid gold. Who said that the government bureaucrats don't have a sense of humor? So, yeah, Canada's trying to go cashless.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait a minute. I see a lot of problems with this. Oh. But I see a lot of good things with this, though, too. So, I mean, the part is, yeah, you lose your chip, the money's gone. Okay, that's that part, you know, scares the crap out of me. However, you know, the whole fact of going actually completely paperless or coinless, you know, any form of trying to eliminate anything that could be, well, let me back up, because anything can be hacked, okay? So we know this. It doesn't matter however many limitations you put on anything, someone will always find a way around anything. Okay, with that said, eliminating the number of rotating physical pieces of paper currency in the actual system will then make things a little more easy to control as far as what they have to track as and keep, you know, keep a running total on as far as people trying to duplicate, say.
Well, sure. I mean, that's one of the big draws mm-hmm. to this style of currency is it is hard to duplicate. And by the way, I need a warning button. You know, I'll have to go clip that out of some video game because we have an incoming fox wolf. So I need a red alert or a warning button sound effect of some kind for when we do that. So
I have one of those. I'll give it to you later.
Cool. Hey, Fox.
Gentlemen, behold more corn.
Oh God. So let me paste in the show notes there for you, Fox. And we're actually still in the very first story. Canada is trying to go cashless. They're duplicating Bitcoin and putting on plastic chips they're calling mint chip.
I have a couple of one. They're lowering the amount of money in circulation, physical objects. But
yeah,
I'm guessing the mint chips are going to be quite a bit more expensive to make than paper or plastic.
Yeah, I'm sure they are because they're probably, I'm sure they're roughly equivalent to a flash drive, but those things are fairly cheap.
Yeah.
So,
but also,
Knox had a good suggestion: the Metal Gear spotted noise.
Yes.
So. Also, another thing: seeing that they're just flash drives in the card shape.
Well, we don't actually know that. I'm guessing. Yeah.
I'm just saying they're probably smaller than nothing too big. Guessing they're probably not too well guarded from stuff like outside electrical signals and stuff that'll just fry your money and make you bankrupt.
Well, you know, that's an aspect of anything, you know, digital storage, right? You know, you got the same risk with your cell phone, right? And they probably are going to come up with something where you use your cell phone as this, you know, chip, which, fine, that doesn't bother me that much. I mean, I'd make a point of not losing my cell phone, but I know a lot of people who do lose it or flush it down the toilet or whatever. But the thing that bothers me is they're saying, it's anonymous, and we have no tracking whatsoever. Bullshit. One of the big reasons to go cashless is the amount of tracking you can do, and that there's good and bad in that. One, there is actually some really good things, like Analog was saying earlier, that can prevent counterfeiting. You know, it's like, well, no, actually, we're pretty sure this currency can only exist in one place at a time, so that, you know, the whole copying of it doesn't become such a big issue. But it makes it easier to track fraud as well. Or if you need to go back and reverse a bunch of transactions, maybe you had somebody break into a bank or something. But I'm trying to think of hypotheticals. I'm sure there are situations where being able to go back and reverse transactions like that would be great. But then, of course, you have the whole oppressive regime, government, you know, just confiscating or deactivating your money because you've been declared, you know, an undesirable. That could be a problem, too. So, so you... you there, you are now you are a brown shirt and you have no money. I was like, wait, what? No, I have plenty of money. It's all just a little cheaper. Yeah, we turned that off. You know? So, you know, the whole untraceable thing is bullshit because there's no way, there's no reason to do this unless you're, you know, keeping a log somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's just on the chip, it's makes the whole electronic thing quite easily to manipulate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if that's the case and they're not actually logging it anywhere, shit, we'll figure out an interface to that chip real quick and just start, you know, copy paste. It's like, you know, I'm a trillionaire in Canada. I mean, you know, shit.
And then transfer the money.
And see also, how fast you can do it.
Yeah. Also, if it's like no central thing keeping track. Yes, they may keep track of where the numbers are going from one person to the next at certain points. But if
seems
a lot easier to have money getting lost in loops from. I've lost my train of thought.
No, I know where you were going. It's like, okay, let's say you had 500 of these, you know, mint chip credits or whatever they are, and you copied them onto another card, right? And you did this to an illegal hacked system, you know, average issue laptop, whatever. You somehow duplicated it. So you go in a store, and you spend that $500 off chip one. And then you go into a different store owned by a different chain that preferably uses a different bank, and you spend the $500 again. And they won't catch that for a very long time until it gets up that, hey, we've got two copies of whatever, you know, credit in the system. Hmm. So if you do that lots of times and, you know, find a way to do money laundering so that people don't notice it until it's way too late, yeah, you know, I'll be a trillionaire in Canada, But I don't know. Be something fun to hack.
And also, prize of only $50,000 for you figuring out how to use their currency. Seems like you could make a lot more by breaking their currency.
Well, they're trying to encourage an app ecostructure around the currency. Like I said, you know, the whole holding the credits on your phone style of thing. The other thing is too, you know, misbehaving apps have been a problem on computers, cell phones, whatever, for a very long time. So what's to prevent me from doing the Superman 3 thing and shaving a few cents off every dollar, so to speak, whatever the equivalent in these credits is?
They're getting rid of pennies, right?
Yeah, that's my point. You know, what's to prevent me from just rounding every transaction up to the next dime and grabbing the difference and sending it out across the internet? So, you know, there's going to have to be a little bit more here than just, oh, yep, pull down, put this on your iPhone, and now you're using, you know, the cyberpunk currency or whatever they're going to. Anyways, moving on. Next story. This one's from Ars. The MPAA, you can infringe on according to the MPAA, you can infringe on copyright by embedding a video. As in, the video's hosted on YouTube, you embed it on your blog, and you get the DMCA takedown, as well as YouTube.
They're going after links again, pretty much.
Pretty much. Go ahead, Fox.
That's a 50 minus DKP.
Yeah, I think I already played that one tonight. Let's see.
In any event, that's really fucked up.
Yeah, you're. That's a fucking 50 DKP minus! That's what you're looking for, right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, the Motion Picture Association of America is squaring off against a coalition of internet giants and public interest groups over the key question of whether it's possible to directly infringe on copyright. Now, they are saying directly infringe, not secondary infringement. Because secondary infringement is what they nailed Napster and Grokster and LimeWire on, by the way. Possible to directly infringe copyright by embedding an image or video hosted by a third party. A federal judge took that position last July, and apparently I missed that, prompting a chorus of criticism. Two briefs, one by Google and one by Facebook, the other by the... one by Google and Facebook, and the other by the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Public Knowledge, attacked the decision as contrary to past precedent and potentially disruptive to the internet economy. You think?
Just a little.
They asked the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals to overturn it. Last week, the MPAA joined the fray with a brief in support of the Illinois federal judge, John F. Grady's ruling. Oh, that guy's a target of Anonymous now. It urged... if he's not already, right? It urged the Seventh Circuit not to draw a legal distinction between hosting content and embedding it. In the MPAA's views, both actions should carry the risk of liability for direct copyright infringement. The case arose from a dispute over internet pornography. What a surprise. My Vidster is a video... of all. I've had to deal with a bunch of DMCA complaints at work lately, all of them for porn. And it's just like... like, wow, really? Some of these names. Anyways, the case arose from a dispute over internet pornography. My Vidster is a video bookmarking site that allows users to save links to their favorite videos and share them with others. So it's Reddit or Dig for YouTube. The site supports embedding, so bookmark videos can be viewed on a Vidster page surrounded by My Vidster ads. A porn company called Flavorworks discovered the... that's a name right there. Flavorworks.
Flavor of love.
Flavor Flav, nigga.
Something. Discovered numerous My Vidster pages with embedded Flavor videos. My Vidster did not host the videos. I'm
sorry.
I know.
This is so funny. Every time I hear you say that, all I can do is picture him and you know, to hear the story talking about porn, you know, I'm picturing him doing porn.
What is wrong with you? Yeah, yes. I don't think that's a middle picture many people want. So
I'm just helping everyone else have that picture now.
Yeah.
So
yeah, how kind of you. My Vidster did not host the videos. They were streamed by a third party hosting site, such as RedTube. But Flava sent My Vidster.
Does anybody have a Flava Flav clip we can play?
Oh, no. It'd be so awesome. I wish I did right now.
Okay, I'm going to skip the rest of that because it lines up how this porn video
just
sued.
Change the name.
Yeah. Wait, okay, this porn company ended up suing My Vidster because they were embedding videos from like RedTube. The case has been plagued by confusion over the difference between hosting a video and embedding a video hosted by somebody else. My Vidster's owner, Marques Günther, failed to clearly explain the distinction in his testimony, and Flavor's, damn it, lawyers exploited Gunter's poor communication skills to make him look evasive and indifferent to following the law. In other words, Buddy, who runs the site, you know, is a computer nerd and couldn't get up in front of court and really explain what was going on. So the MPAA and the porn videos lawyers are taking advantage of the fact that this guy doesn't speak that well in public to try to get embedding, you know, to be direct infringement.
Wow.
Which means any pages that allow embedding, if this stands, that's going to go away, because that could make anybody hosting pages that allow embedding, like, you know, fucking Facebook and MySpace. Yeah.
Nice. So
bullshit.
Yeah, this is not good.
No. Well, especially because you're envisioning all that weird porn this whole time too. So that's not
yes, yeah. So I mean, it's you know, it's hard at this point to concentrate on the on the stupid crap. You know that. I guess what gets me more than anything is so many times we hear all these stories about how these judges who really don't honestly understand what they're making a law or a precedent. You know. Behind these different suits, basically, all they're doing is listening to, oh, well, yeah, my buddy, that the lawyer over there, is making a great argument. You know, I want to pad his pocket. So, yeah, let's go ahead and make this and screw up everybody else.
No, I think you're right. I think it comes down to these judges don't actually understand what's going on and what the difference is. And they just go, well, you know, somebody obviously had to know this was infringing before they embedded it, because they had to know what they were embedding. And I can understand where the argument's coming from, but it implies a complete lack of understanding of how this stuff actually works. Because by removing that DMCA protection of, you know, in this case it was that My Vidster site, they're not going to be able to operate, essentially. They would have to review all user embeds before allowing it to go up, which means the site just can't operate and they have to shut down or turn into a link farm. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, am I misunderstanding that? I mean, the way that would work? I'm pretty sure that's how it would go.
That sounds right to me.
And anybody else who does something similar where you've got user embedded content, it would just have to go away.
Yeah.
So, because, I mean, there's no way to operate that kind of site. I mean, not unless you've got an army of, you know, interns or college students willing to work for nothing to review this stuff. So.
Well, no, that's possible.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, the whole user review thing, right? But how long does it take before everybody just says, eh, screw it, it's all approved? I mean.
Yeah.
So. All right, next one up. This one's from The Verge. This is cool. Code isn't physical property under the definition of the National Stolen Property Right Act. Or National Stolen Property Right. Why do I keep wanting to say copyright, not property. Fuck. Got me all messed up. It's because you're talking about me and porn. Should have had syntax on this show. Shit. The National Stolen Property Act, U.S. court rules. In a ruling today, and this was written on the 11th, it was decided that under the U.S. National Stolen Property Act, NSPA, electronic code cannot be a stolen good because it cannot be physically obtained. Wired reports that the written decision was handed down today from U.S. Court of Appeals, overturning a lower court's ruling that sentenced a Goldman Sachs programmer to an 8-year prison stint for downloading some of the firm's stock trading source code. I hope he posted that on the internet. According to the judges, the programmer, named Sergey Alkinov, could not be guilty under either the NSPA or the Electronic Espionage Act of 1996, both of which were used by U.S. prosecutors in a 2010 trial to imprison Alkinov. Since Alkinov never obtained physical control over the code, nor deprived Goldman of its use, he could not have offended the NSPA. Additionally, since the code Alkinov downloaded wasn't produced for or placed in interstate or foreign commerce, his actions could not be a violation of the EEA. While the decision on its face does imply that electronic code is not physical property, it's important to remember the judges ruled that this particular acts used to prosecute Alkinov cannot be interpreted to cover the theft of code. In a concurring opinion, Judge Guido Calabresi said, "It's hard for me to conclude that Congress in this law actually meant to exempt the kind of behavior in which Alkinov engaged, and he hoped that it will return to the issue and clarify what is criminal and what is not." So in other words, it's not that they're saying what this guy did was right or legal. They're saying that the laws the government tried to pursue him under didn't apply.
Yep.
And I like
What the ever-loving fuck? Like, if this becomes a precedent, okay, so the program that I just downloaded is a series of codes. The music I just downloaded is, in fact,
I like that precedent too. Yeah,
you know, it's like, if that can't be used to sue this guy, fuck you very much.
It all goes under copyright law.
Yeah, it's like, behold, I have no physical copy. It's all just data and code.
Well, that's what it should be, though. I mean, it's like writing. It's code. It's numbers, and it's the same thing with, you know, MP3s, image files, words, whatever that goes across the line, right? It's all just data, which means I'm, you know, just because I make a copy of it doesn't mean I'm stealing it. It might mean I'm not entitled to it, which would be a copyright violation, but it would not be a theft because you're not missing anything.
Yeah, precisely.
So, you know, I think that's the correct way to go about it. I think it should be handled under, you know, copyright law, or hopefully not patent law. I guess it's legal here, but I don't think patents should apply to software either. So, but apparently they do. So this next one's from Torrent Freak. Hot Files' most downloaded files are open source software. In the ongoing court battle between the MPAA and the CyberLocker Hot File, Duke University law professor James Boyle has filed an important expert report, countering claims from the movie industry that Hot File has few non-infringing uses. The professor shows that the most downloaded files on the CyberLocker are open-source software. In addition, he argues that affiliate programs are used for compensating content creators for the effort for their efforts. Last year, the MPAA started a lawsuit against Hotfile, one of the internet's most popular cyberlocker services. The movie studios claim the file hoster is promoting massive digital theft and wants it to be shut down, an accusation Hotfile fiercely rejects. In recent months, both parties have filed dozens of papers at court supporting their representative arguments. The MPAA describes Hotfile as a piracy haven akin to the likes of Mega Upload. To substantiate this accusation, the studios hired an expert who claimed that more than 90% of all downloads on the site are copyright infringement. And in response, Hotfile hired an expert who discredited the report, describing it as both unreliable and unscientific. So, in other words, it's like, except they're getting really expensive people to say it. Seriously, they're paying somebody a lot of money to go, I mean,
yeah, like, seriously, like, even though it's cited in the article, I was totally going to bring up the whole Mega Upload thing. It's like, hey, guess what? There's more uses than just piracy on there, but you want to shut it down because there happens to be piracy on there.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, by that argument, nobody should have computers. But
yeah, precisely.
And the defendant didn't stop there. Torrent Freak has obtained a confidential report where Duke University law professor James Boyle presents some revealing facts about the non-infringing use of Hotfile. The document was filed under seal last month and reveals that sharing of non-infringing content is widespread on the CyberLocker. No shit. Everybody does that kind of stuff. I mean, sure, people upload, you know, some CD they ripped, but, you know, RU was uploading clips from our shows to Mega Upload. Lots of people who create their own content use these things to distribute it around to their friends. While the professor does not assess what percentage of content on Hotfile is infringing, he does note that the two most downloaded files on the site are open source software, with 885,583 and 629,783 downloads respectively. The open source applications iReeb and Snowbreeze were most shared, something Boyle believes the court should take into consideration. Notice they don't tell you what those two open source projects actually are. Analog, you know what they are.
Yeah.
Yep. Those are for jailbreaking iPhones and iPads.
Yep.
The fact that it is highly likely that the two most commonly downloaded files on Hotfile are open source programs, it seem to be explicitly shared. Wait, that's not written well. Appears relevant to any assessment that the court might make about the current usage of the system, the professor writes in his report. Linked to the popularity of the above applications, Boyle brings up another important argument. While the MPAA and others claim that affiliate programs which compensate users for generating downloads are solely set up to promote infringement, several software developers actually use them to generate revenue for their free programs. So, and I think he's got a point there. I hope nobody points out to the court that that's for jailbreaking iPhones, because I think a lot of people think that's illegal too, even though it was actually ruled that it's totally legal. So, but
yeah,
I think we did all the picking apart of that story as I was reading it. So
we're going to go ahead and gloss over the practical uses of this software because pirates.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. The quote unquote gun control advocates want. It's like, yeah. It's like, oh my God, you could use a gun to hurt somebody. We have to ban anything that resembles a gun. It's like, yeah, actually, this is made of Nerf. It's not going to hurt anybody. Yeah. No, it's a gun. You can't have it. So,
and the one thing I don't,
it's my foot.
About.
It's made of meat. I'm going to kick balls with it.
What were you going to say, BSV?
Yeah, one thing I don't get about the whole hot fire. They're just stirring your data.
Yeah.
So technically, if they find this illegal, wouldn't that mean just physical storage rentals are going to be illegal, since they can possibly contain illegal substances?
Think of the lawsuit.
Stolen goods.
Think of the lawsuit Hitachi and Western Digital are going to have on their hands. I mean, my God.
You sell what?
Hard drives.
They can store things?
No, yeah. You're right. You're right. If you take that kind of argument out to its logical conclusion, you shouldn't have any content that's, you know, writable. It should all be read-only and controlled and issued out. So
I'm not even talking about digital. The physical, you rent a garage to store stuff in. If there's illegal goods in that, isn't it held reliable who rented and not the landowner?
No, you're absolutely correct. And why that doesn't apply to digital goods, is purely so they can make a political argument.
Yeah. You're right. And it's also because the old people that are making the laws don't fucking understand what the hell they're dealing with.
That's also true. So, anyways, the next one's from ours. Mozilla may make Flash click to play by default in future Firefox. I like this.
I could be okay with that.
Firefox developers are considering making web plugins like Adobe Flash an opt-in feature. Although there is still a long way to go before it's ready for Firefox proper, switching to an opt-in click-to-play approach for plugins could help make Firefox faster, more secure, and a bit easier on the laptop battery. No shit. An early version of the click-to-play option for plugins is now available in the Firefox nightly channel. So if you go grab the nightly build, like now, you can turn this on. Once that's installed, you'll need to type about config in the URL bar and search and enable the plugins. click.click_to_play flag. Once that's done, visit a page with Flash content, and it won't load till you click it. While HTML5 reduces the need for Flash and other plugins, there's still a big part of the web today. Even where HTML5 has had great success, like VideoTag, it hasn't yet solved every publisher's problems and remains incapable of some things we do with Flash. That means Flash will very likely remain a necessary part of the web for at least a few more. Yeah. The point they're making here is Flash isn't going to go away. You're just going to have both Flash and HTML5 until Flash finally, you know, slowly dies away, you know, however long from now.
Just like Java? Oh, wait.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, wait, Minecraft's in Java. Fuck. Anyways. At the same time, Flash and other plugins are often responsible for poor performance and security vulnerability. Yeah, they are. So it is something necessary, blah, blah, blah. Another popular solution is the click-to-play approach that Mozilla developers are considering. It's not a new solution, as Chrome already offers the option, but so far no web browser has made it the default behavior. A web page with embedded Flash content, when using Flash Block or something similar, is installed. You'll see a static image where the Flash movie would normally be playing. Click the image and the plugin loads. You know, they're not, that's, okay, they're slating it for Firefox 14. There's not much else here in the article, but there's a great feature that they're not talking about with the whole click-to-play thing being enabled. The way most web pages, especially the advertising kind, are getting around the whole, you know, your browser not allowing third-party cookies or people clearing their cookies, is they're using Flash cookies, because most users don't know how to go in and clear those because it's a pain in the butt. So if Flash doesn't load on its own by default, that means all your Flash cookies quit working.
Maybe in the meantime, you should contact that agent guy you know, and he could do a thing on that.
Yeah, that might not be a bad idea. Actually, if you look down at Digital Dojo, we're going to talk about safe browsing. So
huzzah!
Yay! So let's see. Anybody else have anything on that one before we move on here?
Nah.
Cool. All right.
Yay.
Yep. Huzzah. Okay. From Torrent Freak, Russia moves to hold ISPs responsible for illegal file sharing. The Cybercrime Department of Russia's Interior Ministry says it intends to get tough on the country's ISPs when their customers share copyrighted or otherwise illegal material. You know, such as anything. It's Russia, so anything that's not soaked in vodka. Authorities say that they are currently carrying out nationwide checks on ISPs' local networks and could bring prosecutions as early as next month. Having largely failed in their earlier bids to aggressively target individual file sharers, in recent times, copyright holders and authorities have been forced to look elsewhere for someone to blame. So they can't get the people who are actually doing it, so they're going to grab this side guy. And be like, no, you, we know who you are, you're responsible. Well, seriously, I it sounds funny, but That's really what they're doing. It's like, well, we can't get the guy who's actually storing the crap in this garage, so we're going to go after the people who own the garage. To use BSV's example from earlier. Mm. That's exactly what they're doing. Worldwide lobbying efforts have borne fruit, and now it's almost routine to see ISPs dragged into the debate on illegal file sharing and treated as if they are the reason the problem exists, or at the very least, it's their place to take responsibility. According to a report coming out of Russia, authorities there are about to get tough on ISPs whose local networks are being used to share copyrighted and other illegal material. These networks, while present within the ISP's own infrastructure, provide users access to a wealth of legal content and services such as internet relay chat, but inevitable unauthorized content is available too. While there is no suggestion that the ISPs directly advise the advertise the availability of such material. There are claims that they use the existence of these networks as a plus point when marketing their product. So if they don't just say, yes, you can get to Facebook, if they say, yeah, you can get to anything on the internet, that means they're marketing. So, yeah. Anything else here worth reading? Penalties for direct copyright infringement in Russia can be harsh as 6 years imprisonment. Extending liability to intermediaries is something being touted as a series of amendments to the country's civil code proposed by President Dmitry Medvedev and passed to the State Duma last week. They could be enforced as early as September. So, yeah, they're going to start sending ISP people who run ISPs to jail for file sharing.
Oh, in Soviet Russia... Oh, wait, that happens everywhere now.
Soviet Russia is catching up.
Yeah, it's just kind of depressing. I mean, they can't get the people who are actually doing it, so they're going after the middlemen.
So, basically, it's going to see a lot of ISPs turning people over.
That's the hope. That's exactly what they're trying to pull off, or at least putting in really strong filtering. But what happens if somebody's using Tor, right? I mean, like, oh, the ISP has absolutely no chance of, you know, even knowing it's going on if it's all encrypted and, you know, going through the onion.
That's what happens when, hey, Bob, we have a special project for you to start working on.
Yeah, that's probably about how that's going to work out, too. You're right.
And Bob's like the 18-year-old intern.
Yeah,
dude, I can block Facebook, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just going to block that. Yeah. That's what they want. They want them to start censoring it. So, well, leave it to Russia to figure out how to censor shit, right? Actually, well, China's already doing it, so what the hell?
Speaking of.
Yep. I tried to do a transition. I failed. From ZDNet. Anonymous wants to take down the Great Firewall of China. I often give a lot of shit to Anonymous because I think a lot of their stuff is silly and just giving people excuses to write bad laws, but I think this one's fun. Okay, and I've got a note in here that I went through and cut bits out of this story as opposed to just copying the whole thing into the notes because I wrote it was badly written. It was badly written for a news story. It was written as this... it was written up like it was somebody's blog. So... What I've got is just the important bits. The summary is that the countless attacks on Chinese websites are apparently just a warm-up. Anonymous wants to take down the Great Firewall of China. The hacktivist group Anonymous has a new Chinese branch, Anonymous China, which has been very active since it launched its Twitter account on March 30th of this year. The group has hacked and defaced hundreds of Chinese government, company, and other general websites to the point where China even acknowledged the attacks. That's pretty good. You get the Chinese government to own up to it going on. The hacking has continued against various websites, but even more importantly, the group has declared a new target, the Firewall of China. They've actually, in the original story, they had the tweets cut and pasted in, and they didn't read that well, so I just left them out. The Anonymous China has hacked shangzai.gov.cn, publicly posting 8 usernames and passwords on PasteBay. This was soon followed by the hacking of szzfcg.gov.cn, which resulted in the site's full database being leaked and posted to wikisend.it, and included thousands of email addresses, logins, and passwords. So, yeah, and Anon's, you know, going hardcore after China websites with the intent of taking down their firewall.
You know, I don't think this is a bad thing, personally.
I don't either. I mean, China's already got the, you know, the crazy censorship in place, so you might as well go after it, right?
That's right.
That is my big beef with the way Anonymous operates, is they give, say, our government the excuse to go in and write these really crappy laws because they're out there making all the noise, right? But if the laws are already in place, hell yeah, fight it. So.
But then again, like, you know, when do you start fighting?
As soon as the law is passed, well, no.
Yeah, but then, you know, is it already too late?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I'm not sure.
It's like, you know, today, China, tomorrow, Australia, free porn for RU.
that's a good point. I guess it would be, well, I mean, you know, they timed the SOPA PIPA thing fairly well. That worked. or at least shelved it for a few months.
Yeah, but I mean, it's back now under a different name.
Yeah.
It's not getting much publicity yet, but...
Yeah.
And all the, you know, the backdoor bullshit they pass, you know, at midnight on a Sunday.
Or they tack it on to the, you know, kittens and you know, puppies and light.
Yes, yeah, stop setting kittens and puppies on fire. Also ban the internet.
Yeah, that they, you know, they call it that bill, and then, you know, or like the Defense Appropriations Act, where, oh, yeah, by the way, we're a police state now. So.
Yeah. Surprise.
It's not rape if you yell surprise, right? So, I mean.
Yeah, pretty much.
So. Anyways, the last story here is an older story, but it's just kind of fun, mostly because we used to do a lot of, in Second Life. It's where we did all the shows before we switched over to Skype. And this is from hypergridbusiness.com. OpenSim exceeds Second Life private regions. OpenSim's top, this is actually from February, so some of the numbers they're quoting are old. OpenSim's top 40 public grids gained 580 new regions over the past month, hitting a new record of 23,231 regions. Meanwhile, the total number of active public grids is 118, with 20 new added to our list this month. Not counting private grids, SimOnStick, and grids running behind company and school firewalls, there are a total of 24,161 regions on these public grids. By the comparison, Second Life now has 23,359 privately owned regions. I didn't realize Second Life had that many privately owned regions. Holy crap.
That's a lot.
Considering what those things cost a month? Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if a lot of schools are trying to use them maybe for a project type. You know,
well, I could see it, but given, you know, the amount of, you know, giant wobbly penis that flies around in Second Life, I'm not.
I have no idea what kind of group started that around.
I mean, you know, just the amount of crazy shit in Second Life, I'd be surprised that most schools would still even think about using it. But
you pretty much figure most schools are probably running in they have a separate. Kids, Second Life, like teens and shit like that.
Yeah, you'd assume that's where maybe that's where they are. I mean, I don't know. This article doesn't.
It's
really
like they get a little bit of a buffer. I mean, it's pretty much like fucking that old hooker with a condom. I mean, there's a little bit of a buffer there, but not enough.
Well, you know, I mean, I suppose if you're monitoring what they do and making sure their avatar doesn't leave that region, it's like Timmy, yeah. Get back on the bus.
Like, oh, teacher's coming, control shift H. Hey, look, I'm back. No big deal.
Let's see.
Oh, here. I wasn't just in the sex farm. My clothes haven't loaded yet.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Where was I? There are an unknown number of private grids, possibly numbering in the thousands. There's currently no way to track that. OS grid gained the most regions, growing by 1,100 to a new peak of 11,919 regions. OS Grid is actually where we were running our little sim for a while. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. OS Grid is likely to drop a significant size at the end of the month. Is it long overdue housekeeping by grid admins? So that's probably already happened. So it's the numbers. This story is actually from mid-February. But I saw that when I was looking at some other stuff today. So it's like, that's just fun. We've got to talk about that. So, yeah, the what a surprise. The set your own server up has surpassed, you know, paying Linden Labs, however much it is a month for a grid. They're a couple thousands. $100 a month. Is it thousands?
A full sim is between 1,000 and 2,000 last time we were on.
And there are 23,000 of them. Holy crap.
You think take all my money for this virtual shit.
You'd think they could spare some of those dollars for developers, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, people wonder why pre-sims is
actually this article. I don't have a link for it, but this article mentioned the sim on a stick, and I went and Googled to see what that was, and that somebody has put together a little portable folder meant to be like put on a USB stick that'll run an OS Grid sim, similar to what I set up for us when we were experimenting with OS Grid as opposed to Second Life for doing shows. So That you know, you can run your own little private grid if you want to just experiment around in Second Life. It was kind of cool. But anyways, moving on.
Me love you long time.
What I thought would be fun to talk about for Digital Dojo tonight was setting up a truly secure browsing environment. And I came up with a couple of different ways to do it. So just to make sure we're absolutely clear on the subject, I'm not talking about an unpatched version of XP running Internet Explorer. That's a bad idea.
You mean I shouldn't be doing that?
No, you go right ahead, BSV. Let me just punch in this URL for you to go to here. And don't mind that it's a series of numbers and not actually a website. It's normal. That's fine. You just click on that, and when it says it wants to run this Java applet, you say yes.
And wait a minute. Politics has left me bitter. I will click on lemonparty.org. There's all that mental image for you right there.
What's the one? Are you always pimps? My Lazy Sundays or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
I've yet to go to that one just because I'm pretty sure it's something horrible.
Oh, I'm fairly certain it's something I just don't want to see. So I'm fairly pleased that up to this point in my life I've managed to avoid having to see Two Girls, One Cup. So, you know,
well, I'll end up trolling one of my friends with it that doesn't know, and just like watch their reaction and judge from there.
Yeah. So anyways, but using Adblock and NoScript is good, but it's really getting harder and harder to do, as almost every flippin' site out there needs scripting to even, like, load. And of course, once you turn scripting on, you know, one URL, all bets are off, right? And Adblock is pretty good, but it's not perfect, and I've seen more and more stuff finding ways around it. So...
like, Adblock's pretty good because since you can right-click and, you know, select shit out, be like, you know, fuck you, don't show me this anymore. But trying to run most sites, like, with no script nowadays...
It's painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll go through and I'll do, like, the temporary allow until I find the one part that makes it work. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I won't, like, permanently allow that because it'll pop up on other sites, but... you know, it's ridiculous how many times I click on the options for it to see what's blocked and fucking up the page and see how much, like, Google ad services and Facebook and all those other shit's in there.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've actually gone to turning NoScript off most of the time and just being careful on what I do because it's gotten to the point now you can't use the internet without scripting being turned on, which is unfortunate, kind of.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's what I was doing before, and then like you started talking about NoScript, it's like, oh shit, yeah, I'll throw that on there just for kicks, and like it's been more of a pain in the ass. It's like, you know, even going to like pay your bills or do any banking, it's like, why the fuck isn't this search function working, or why the hell isn't this fucking working? What the fuck is this? Oh wait, NoScript's killing it.
Yeah, and you know, I'll be honest, NoScript's probably saved my behind a couple of times on you know you click a link like, oh shit, I wish I hadn't clicked that, and
yeah.
You know,
and NoScript blocks everything, you're just on a blank page, like, I'm gonna go ahead and leave now.
Yeah. Or you get the half loaded, you know, thing trying to look like your Windows XP control panel saying you need this antivirus. It's like, thank God NoScript stopped that. But it's
stop looking at Flavor Flav.
Nice sample. But anyways, yep. This is totally the, you know, we're going to be totally talking about the guide here of what you want to do when you want to look at the really nasty porn. So,
so in other words, the Flavor Flav porn.
You know, when it's so bad that you're willing to microwave the laptop when you're done. Yeah.
Gosh. Ding, how drive's done.
Yeah.
Ding, fries are done. But you know, as well, you might be, you know, if you're like on a work machine, it might not be kosher to go installing Firefox and add-ons. You might be stuck with whatever version of Internet Explorer. So yeah. So, you know, of course, portable Firefox on a USB can work here. And if you're really paranoid, you can grab the Tor private browser and throw that on a USB, and that works just fine. But again, you know, this comes back to NoScript and Adblock are not 100% protection here. So they're good, but they're not, you know, they're not perfect. So it really comes down to you've got to somehow sandbox the browser. You've got to coordinate off from the rest of the system because it is the egress point. It's where shit's going to come in. So I may have said that wrong, ingress point. Anyways, I is from the South. I know vocabulary. Anyways.
It is where the bad shit gonna get on your hard drive computer, Matron.
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
There we go. Anyways, so...
Where's Syntax so I can yell butane?
Oh, God. Anyways, now just a couple of points. Using a sandbox browser can be a pain in the ass, you know, straight up. Downloading stuff, it ends up inside the sandbox. So if you go downloading whatever, you got to go into the sandbox and copy it out. And if your browser auto-updates, you know, it may not work if it's sandboxed. It, you know, the updates get rolled back every time, so that could be a bit of a pain. But there's a couple of different ways of doing it just on the host, on your main machine. I've used a program called Sandbox IE, which is kind of a fun solution. Now, it does require installation, so if you're in the whole, you know, work computer environment, it doesn't work so much. But it hooks the operating system calls to the hard disk and has a sandbox folder where all the writes go. So if your browser tries to access the registry, it'll actually make a copy of the changes that would go into the registry and write that out in the sandbox. And then when the program wants to look at the registry, Sandboxy takes the original registry, overlays its changes from that file, and then shows that to the program in the sandbox. So as far as the program can tell, it's making all the changes and writing out to the hard drive as it wants. But it's actually all going into the sandboxed folder. And that works pretty well, except it's only hooking stuff at the operating system level. So if you get a really good piece of exploit code in there, that might go. It might go under it. It might get around it. But Sandboxy is also a good way of capturing malware if you know that the site's not doing that kind of stuff, because it all goes in the sandbox and it's not actually running on your computer, so you can kill it and then go in the sandbox and actually pull out the malware. And that's pretty cool. And I've done that trick a couple of times just to see what something was. So the other way to do it, you know, if you don't want to grab a different machine or reboot, is to use virtual machines.
Yep. And of course, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people do. And VirtualBox and VMware, of course, are major players here. They both have free versions. Now, the free version from VMware, I don't believe VMware Player lets you do snapshotting. You got to buy Workstation to do that. But VirtualBox does let you do snapshotting. I'll admit, I haven't really used VirtualBox for a couple of years, but it's it works. I wasn't terribly fond of some of the things with it, but I don't have a major problem with it. I just don't use it as much as I use VMware. I've also found this program called MOBA Live CD, which is a packed up, I think it's QEMU, but it's all packed up into a single executable. And it'll actually let you run an ISO file. Like if you've got an ISO file of like a Ubuntu or Tails or any live CD, you know, Windows PE if you want, it'll actually run that as a live CD without having to install anything. So you can run it all from a flash drive.
Okay, so Marv, I've heard of the other two, but what is Tails?
Tails is the customized Debian live CD that's put out by the Tor project that is meant for Tor browsing, and everything that goes out of that operating system goes through Tor.
Okay.
And when you reboot, it actually it won't write anything to disk unless you really go through some hoops to get it to do
it. So it's pretty much like Deep Freeze, but in a complete OS and going through Tor.
Yeah, and actually when you reboot, it's fun because it goes through and writes random noise to all the memory, including the video memory. So before it restarts, you get static all over your screen. It's kind of fun.
Nice.
And it's paranoid to an extreme, but it's fun. And Deep Freeze is another one. I didn't think of that to put in the list because, you know, it's not free. But actually, Sandboxy is not free either, now that I think about it.
Well, I mean, come on, you know, server provides.
Pirate Bay, excuse me. Anyways, don't know where that came from. But
some static broke through. I don't know, some librarian talking for the future. I don't know.
But, no, Deep Freeze is a good solution, too. You can freeze the hard drive, then run your browser. And then when you're done,
most of the universities I worked at, they were pretty good with Deep Freeze. The enterprise level was like, they actually offered, like, once a semester, was like, go ahead and try to fuck up an OS. Just try. And
yeah,
I've
seen malware get around Deep Freeze, actually.
Yeah.
It didn't work that well.
They shouldn't have told me that, but I had to rebuild the machine afterwards, but it didn't matter.
Yeah, you can get around deep freeze because it's the same thing as sandboxy. It's hooking stuff at the operating system level.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go and do your own calls, it can get around it. But now, relevant to either running it in VMware, the other way is just do straight up virtual, you know, straight up bootable OS. That's where you take the live CD you were loading up in VMware. Because like if you're going to do a VMware, you could just do like a, say, Ubuntu install or even a Windows install if you need Windows software. Load it into VMware or VirtualBox. Get it all set up to one, and then snapshot it. So you've got a known clean snapshot. Go and look at, you know, go and do whatever it is you're going to do that, you know, you really need your clean browsing experience, your secure browsing experience, you know, your really, really nasty porn or whatever it is you're going to look at. And when you're done, revert the snapshot, and it's all gone. Everything that you did is gone. So if you hit any really bad malware, or, you know, just don't want that stuff in your browser history, whatever it is. You know, we're just going to leave it
Take
up to your imagination.
Take the electromagnet away from your hard drive and just reboot.
Yeah, there you go. Now, you can take, you know, that is something that you can do with virtual machines. You get a persistent OS, so if you need some specific software, you can install it and then snapshot. Now, the bootable OSs are a little bit more extreme. You have things like Tails, like we were talking about. Most Linuxes will actually have a bootable flash drive or a bootable CD where, you know, it's just to try out the Linux, but that also makes a great secured browsing environment because when you reboot, everything's gone. And you can actually do Windows PE, which is a bootable version of Windows from DVD or USB. And I've actually got, for the links section, a guide of how to set up a bootable Windows 7 PE environment from a DVD, and that's also fairly easy to translate to USB. So if you really want to do a bootable Windows, you can. I've seen links for bootable Mac OS X. I didn't bother to go find one. So, and like I was saying, most of the live environments, you can actually boot into a VM if you don't want to reboot your main machine. But just having, say, Tails or, you know, Fedora on a flash drive and being able to reboot and boot up into it, that's really handy if you just need a clean system, you know, no questions asked, right?
Right.
Now, and the last thing you can use is a disposable host or a burnable host. If you've got a old laptop or a spare sys, you know, load up whatever operating system works well. I would suggest a Linux, but, you know, if you want to use Windows. And do all your dangerous browsing on it, and then when you're done... Well, okay, before you do your dangerous browsing, you use CloneZilla or Norton Ghost or install Deep Freeze and, you know, get a clean state of the image and save it out to it, or it's clean state of the machine, save it out to an image, and then go do your horrible, whatever it is you're concerned about privacy, you know, your subversive material, whatever. And then when you're done, you know, restore the image back and it's all gone. So if you got malware or whatever in there, it's only there for until you restore the image. And like we were saying earlier, if all else fails, you can always throw the laptop in the microwave. it's like, oh
Pretty
God,
sparkles.
It's like, you know, you saw something and it just won't go away. So there's no fix. You throw the laptop in the microwave and call it a night. I mean, it's just
a little bit more mind.
Remember,
bleach.
This does not work for problems that have been burnt into your own eyes.
Nope, you need eye bleach or boobs and explosions for that. So
what has been seen cannot be unseen.
Anyways, with all of these methods, I do suggest having a USB stick of appropriate size or even a USB hard drive to move files around with. Because in the sandbox, especially in the VMs or if you're using a bootable system, if you download something, whatever you download is going in the sandbox as well, right? That's kind of the point. So let's say you download some, you know, tracks you really like, you really want to keep, or maybe a PDF file with recipes for cookies or thermite or something that you really want to keep. And, you know, you save that all, you plug in your flash drive and save it out to there. That way when you reboot, you don't lose your stuff. But if you're going to do that, one, you want to never plug that flash drive into a system you think is compromised, because you'll just, you know, that defeats the point of the sandbox. You'll spread the virus or whatever it is back out to your
it's
real
like
machine.
Like sticking your dick into an old French whore.
Yeah,
you're going to take something back with you that you don't want.
And you know, before you copy the program out of that sandbox, run it You know, run it in the sandbox where it's okay if it fucks shit up. You know, you just reboot and it goes away. You restore from image or revert to snapshot. That way, if it is safe, you know, you can copy it out. You know, plug in your flash drive, copy it out, and have it on whatever machine you want to protect. And this actually applies to everything. When I was, you know, last week we talked about PDF exploits. Yeah, open the PDF before you copy it to the flash drive and make sure the system doesn't start laughing at you. So, and the nice thing is with the VirtualBox, or, you know, with the VM or the throwaway machines, you can actually watch the traffic coming out of them and make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. You know, revert, you know, see the old Digital Dojo on that one. And the other last note I wanted to make on these most of these sandboxing methods actually work with other programs, not just your web browser. So if you've got like chat programs, Instant Messenger, or say file sharing programs like Ganella or BitTorrent, and you want to, you know, kind of guard what's coming in off those, that's another good way to do it. So I don't know. You guys think of anything else you want to throw in there on building safe browsing environments?
I think that covers most of it.
Yeah, grab an old box out of the dumpster and, you know, RU it up for a while and do all your dangerous shit on that and just wipe it every day.
Yeah, that's, I mean, or the same thing with a virtual machine. I mean, I've used...
You know, you should probably set up like an IP cop style network where you have like your red zone that doesn't talk to any of your other network so that it can't transfer across that, but...
That's,
you know,
actually a really good idea.
That's the only other thing that I'd say with like these sandboxes. If you're downloading like some seriously malicious shit, is if it's going to get out on your home network, it doesn't matter if it's in a sandbox. If it goes over your network and fucks anything that's connected to it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about that because I couldn't think of a good thing for Digital Dojo. So I was hashing all this out like 10 minutes before the show. So that's actually a really good point. Is, you know, maybe if you're in a virtual machine, you know, let it do the NAT environment so it can't get out to your other stuff. Or, like you were saying, if you're using a throwaway host, then make sure it's segmented off. If you don't know what he was talking about, IP cop's a firewall system. You can have multiple zones. Another way to do multiple zones is if you've got, say, an old router, like you upgraded from a G router to an N, but you still got the G router. You can set the G router up behind the N router and just turn off its Wi-Fi, or, well, leave it on if you want to use it. But plug into that, and that'll help to shield everything from your, you know, dangerous machine, so to speak, because nothing else is on the same subnet.
I'm just saying you might contact your friend, the agent, about that as well.
Oh, he and I are going to be having a talk. Don't you worry. Might involve a crowbar, but anyways.
Well, best of luck.
So, just to wrap things up here, of course, listen to the stream. We're always updating it. Sard's been looking for new music. We are asking for new music. RU and TAC and a few others have been helping us filter out what we had, and they have finished that up, so send us more so we can give them something to do. I Have Nothing every Saturday, Pure Decking every Thursday, Between the Sheets on Fridays, NR7 whenever somebody hits BSV with a cattle prod, and Galaxy 15 BSV. Do you want to say something to that one?
I prefer not being hit with cattle prods, but...
Okay, we'll just shorten it up. Whenever somebody hits BSV with cattle, and...
also, I may be doing a show tomorrow, unless the catapult fails to hit the house.
We'll check on that. Somebody put that up on YouTube. I want to see a cow catapult. That'd be great. Of course, hit the Galaxy 15 radio site and Twitter handle. Use the feedback forms. If I've made a mistake somewhere, use the feedback form. Definitely, Analog likes having things to make fun of me with, so...
That's awesome.
No, seriously, if I made a mistake, shoot me a link so I can read up on what I said wrong. You know, just, you know, the big "you're wrong" email, that's not actually helpful. You know, if I'm wrong, tell me why. I'd like that. So, has anybody else got anything before we hit the play button here on the music?
Have any of you fucked around with Flux at all?
I have fucked around with sluts, but, you know.
No, not sluts, Flux.
Flux.
F.LUX.
F.LUX. No.
Pretty much what it does is it will alter your screen's brightness and contrast depending on the time of day.
Oh, I remember this thing. It fucked up one of my monitors.
I've been using it at work and at home. It's pretty badass when you have to, like, we remember at 3 a.m. you were supposed to run some automated script and you shut it off for the last upgrade at work and you had to log into your computer, it doesn't blind you as badly.
Okay, well, I'll add that link to the Digital Dojo there. And I remember this saying, I'm not a fan of it, but I know a lot of people who are, so.
Yeah. Hasn't fucked up my monitors yet, so, you know.
Yep. There we go. Well, I say it fucked up a monitor. It's royally screwed up my netbook, which was Hackintoshed at the time. So.
Yeah.
Which that probably explains it right there, right? So,
yeah.
But anyways, that's all I got. I'm hitting the play button now.